W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, your home for original.
I'm Steve Kathan. Secretary of State Blinken has postponed next week's planned diplomatic trip to China. It comes after a suspected Chinese spy balloon was seen over Montana. It's now high over the Midwest.
U.S. officials say the balloon is traveling at an altitude of 66,000 feet and maneuvering as it is blown on a trajectory that is expected to take it across the United States. The Pentagon continues to track it on radar and at times has it under visual observation. Military officials have recommended against shooting it down for now because of the danger it would pose to people on the ground. But officials say that recommendation could change once the balloon gets over an unpopulated area. David Martin, CBS News, Washington.
China insists it's a civilian research balloon and has expressed regrets. The government says employers added 517,000 jobs last month. CBS's Jill Schlesinger says that's considered a strong number.
The January jobs report underscores the message that Jerome Powell gave during his press conference this week. Although economic growth is weakening, the labor market remains resilient, which means the Fed is likely to continue raising interest rates maybe two more times at a quarter point each so that wage growth starts to come down and inflation readings improve.
Wind chills this morning in the upper Midwest were in the 25 below zero range. WCBS meteorologist Craig Allen says the brutal cold is now pushed east.
The winds continue to increase. They'll be running at gale force, running 20 to 30 and gusting over 40 miles per hour at times through the day today. And the temperature and wind combination will keep driving the wind chill down until it reaches dangerously low levels, anywhere from minus 10 to as low as minus 40 or minus 50.
Honda and the government are urging owners of thousands of older vehicles not to drive them until dangerous airbag inflators are replaced. Here's Jeff Gilbert of Detroit affiliate WWJ.
These are older 01 to 03 Hondas and Acuras with non-repaired Takata airbags. Honda says there are 8,200 vehicles out there that have a high risk of having the airbag inflator rupture that can cause death or serious injury. You can check with a dealer or the NHTSA.gov recall database.
A Republican bill in Arizona would restrict drag shows in the state.
It's not R-rated, it's X-rated entertainment.
GOP Senator John Kavanaugh says under the bill, performances would be banned near daycare centers, schools, and churches. Performer Jessica Harper spoke in opposition.
This bill is so vaguely written that it would effectively make it illegal for me to exist in public as a trans woman, let alone DJ anywhere but a strip club.
Checking Wall Street right now, a mixed bag. The Dow is up 57 points. The S&P is down 5. This is CBS News.
Bringing some sanity to the airwaves. The Shaw 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matnair. Here's what you need to know. Milwaukee may host a Republican presidential primary debate as well as the Republican National Convention in 2024. RNC Chair Ronna McDaniel announcing they're considering holding a debate in the city. She didn't offer details but said an announcement will happen in the coming weeks. Several homeowners in Vilas County are stuck in the middle of a decades-long easement dispute between a title company and Lac des Flambeaux tribal officials. In the 60s, private homes were built in the middle of tribal lands with the roads leading to those properties also on tribal land. The agreement to use the roads expired 10 years ago. Tribal leaders say the title companies haven't negotiated in good faith. Homeowners received notice 2 weeks ago they'd no longer be allowed to use the roads. After serving as interim CEO since December, Kohl's Corporation officially naming Tom Kingsbury as the new CEO. I'm Jane Matnair. This is Civic Media News.
Hey everybody, how we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripes Cast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Good. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
Ty Christian from Lords of the Trident. Can you say Max Inc. Radio rocks, Jimmy K is awesome in Japanese?
Sure. Let's see. How do I say rocks? Let me see. すごい! Max Inc. Radio はすごいだと思います。I just said you're great, you know.
Thank you. You're great too.
Original local music from Wisconsin. It's Max Inc. Radio on Civic Media. Saturday night, 6 p.m. to midnight. We are local music.
My fine guest, Maggie Dawn, attorney at law. I thought that the laws of the United States were supposed to evolve with societal norms. The vast majority of Americans, 70% approximately, believe that Roe v. Wade should be the law of the land. So that seems exactly contrary to the way the courts are supposed to evolve with our nation.
I'll just say this. The guy in Colorado can't be forced to make a gay wedding cake, but I can be forced to make a baby. I don't know about you, but that makes no damn sense to me.
Follow the Devil's Advocates on Facebook and Twitter.
The SHA 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Muskego to Pewaukee, always streaming at waukradio.com. The SHA 101 FM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24-7 at waukradio.com.
Commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Unemployment rate at the lowest level since 1969, but... Man, you hear our friends, you hear the Republicans saying the economy, the end of society, the economy's collapsing, the recession's here, Armageddon is around the corner. The U.S. added 517,000 jobs in January. I saw no indication that was coming. There were no expectations. The lowest level, 3.4. Now you. I know my conservative friends have all day today saying, yeah, but. No, but. This is the measure we've been using all along. And look, workforce participation in total numbers is actually down. But yeah, it's because old people retiring. We now have more jobs being created than we have available people. Which is interesting because, again, what conservatives want you to believe is everyone's lazy, no one's working, and they're all still on the government teat. That's the frame. I still, even to this day, I get this from people. That's because Joe Biden gave that $1,400 2 years ago. Now, the numbers are going around. The Twitters were a Twitter with the Biden boom hashtag. In 2 years, 12.1 million jobs added during his term. Say what you want. Things are roaring back. 800,000 of those in manufacturing. So we're at a moment. We're in a moment where the U.S. economy added 517,000 jobs. Unemployment rates at a 54-year low. Manufacturing's coming back in a huge way. All indications... Things looking pretty good. Six straight months of inflation falling. Gas prices down a buck and a half from its peak. Things you would think. We as Americans would go, you know what? We're getting there. Heading in the right direction. Must be doing something right. No. Can't have that because the outrage party. Doing what they do. Now, the weird thing is someone sent me this statistic, and it is true that, Democrats, deliver on job creation. They went back, over the last several presidents, four Republicans, three Democrats. And, during all of those years, the average job growth per month is a huge difference. In fact, the average... How did it go? The average job creation since 1933 with Democrats in the White House as opposed to Republicans. When Democrats are in the White House, the average is about 175,000 jobs per month being created. And that's a good thing, because as population expands, you need to be able to create those jobs just to stay even. When Republicans are in our office, that number is down to 67,000, which means you're losing jobs, which means things are getting worse, which means contracting. And it comes back to the ideas. And this is, again, another one of these moments. The ideology. It comes back to the ideology. And I have people say, well, you're a tax and spend liberal. I go, yeah, I believe in taxing very wealthy people to invest in the things that we need. Yeah, I'll wear that badge with pride. If it means we get better roads and we get better bridges, we get better infrastructure, we get education for our children, we get health care for our citizens. If we get the things we need, yeah. Taxing and spending is how the economy goes. And when Democrats are in office, they do that. They invest. When Republicans are in office, it's all about tightening the belt. Squeeze the belt on working people. And again, it's who gets screwed in these environments. Back to my high school government teacher. Who gets what? Government decides who gets what. When Democrats are in office, the money flows and helps the working people. When Republicans are in office, it's all about taking from working people and giving to the very wealthy. It's that simple. Doesn't get any easier than that. And that has played out time and time and time and time and again. But here we are in this moment. Unemployment is in my lifetime, a record low. Wages are ticking up, not nearly fast enough. And that has everything to do with our labor laws. It has everything to do with the fact that it's harder to join and form unions right now. It's harder to get that first contract. Societally, we're divided and pitted against each other. And there's all of these gimmicks, all of these schemes, all these games out there. For instance, I happen to be paying attention to the Money Watch website today. And good folks over at Money Watch, they had an article that caught my attention just because the headline grabbed my attention, as it's supposed to. You know, they need the clickbait, and they got me. Companies save billions of dollars by giving employees fake manager titles, study shows. And I'm going, they save billions of dollars? Save? I don't know that save is the right word. Screw their workers out of? Yeah, I'd go with that. Cheat them out of? Sure, absolutely. Steal? Uh-huh, yeah, right in line with that. But save? Now, this isn't new. This story, not really new, but there's a study that just came out from researchers from Texas University and Harvard Business School that went and looked at some data from some databases from these online sources and looked at the jobs that were being posted. Burning Glass Technologies, they put up their information, jobs between 2010 and 2018, and came up with some quite interesting little bits. What we already know, during that period, instead of giving people raises, we gave them titles. They weren't, you know, they weren't front desk clerks. They were directors of first impression. They weren't barbers or they were grooming managers. You know, it's like the janitor at school. He's a sanitation engineer, you know, the maintenance engineer. No, he's the garbage man, sanitation engineer. No, he's a garbage man. You know, the truck driver, you know, logistics specialist. You know, we give them these great titles, but with it comes management status. And this is one of those things that, you know, I've had happen to me in my life. I was in a long-term relationship, and I'll never. This is one of those stories that you knew the relationship was over. And I almost fell into this trap. I've always worked in the less than truckload trucking industry. I've always worked hourly wage job. I've always had good wages, good benefits, thanks to my union. But there was a point where this person's like, you should go and try this other job, which would have been a dock supervisor for a less than truckload company, but a supervisor. So I went for the interview and I went through all this process and they offered me the job because, you know, I'm wonderful. And then they told me what it entailed. And it entailed, you know, working 4 days on, 3 days off, 13-hour days, no overtime. And then, you know, having to cover specific ships. And there was a whole bunch of other stuff to where it worked out to where you were working like 55 hours a week in the grand scheme of things for like 40 hours worth of pay. And I turned it down. I said, no, I can't do that. Just the math doesn't add up. You know, economically, it doesn't make any sense that I'm going to make less money doing a job that would just give me a cute little title. And when I went back to this person I was in a long-term relationship with and said, yeah, they offered it, and I turned it down, lost her mind. And the line that I'll never forget that came out of her mouth was, after I explained the economics of it, going, you know, bills, you know, car payments, mortgage, you know, savings, you know, that takes money. Working for free doesn't make sense. The line was, but you'll be management. And they go, what? But you'll be management. And it came back to this embarrassment of work. And this is, you know, this is a couple of decades ago. That kind of embarrassment of actual work is something that's been kind of ingrained in us. You know, and I don't know how or why, but it's one of these things where you go, but the math doesn't add up. And this is what corporations take advantage of. This company was willing to offer me this job to get me to work, you know, more hours, longer hours, you know, more difficult, you know, time frames, you know, weekends, all kinds of stuff. But the allure being, but you'd be management. Now imagine, you know, now you're a low wage worker. You're working at a fast food restaurant. You're working at, you know, a department store. You're working at a number of these places, and you're getting beat up. You're struggling to make ends meet. You know, you haven't done very well. You're struggling, and they offer you this reward. You're management. You're somebody. But the catch is, you're not going to make any more money. The catch is, now you're going to work 100 hours a week for, you know, at the time this study was done, the cutoff was $23,660. Which is about $455 a week, which is, you know, not even a little over $11 an hour. Now you say, you know, you work 100 hours a week, you're making $455 a week. That's well below the minimum wage, but that's legal because you're management. You're exempt from the overtime laws. And when they did this study, and this is the interesting part of this, when they did this study and they checked all of these, all of the salary requirements, all of the salary postings listed under the managerial titles from 2010 to 2018, what they found is the largest spike was the $455 to $480 a week rate, and by a lot, by double of the next. And why is that? Well, because they know what the threshold was. They know where they have to put the bottom line to be able to cheat you out of wages. Now they're saying, look, you know, during this period, you know, per year, workers got cheated out of about $4 billion in overtime a year. Now stop and think about this. If you're making $23,660 a year, and having this inflated title costs you what they said, their number, 13% lower wages than you would have earned otherwise. That's a substantial sum of money. That's like almost $3,000 more in your pocket. $3,000 that the company saved, cheated you out of, that didn't go into supporting your family. Now, if you remember, we talked about this extensively during the Obama years, because the push at the end of the Obama term was to raise that 23,660 up to 47 something, where it should have remained from the 70s had it kept up with inflation. The Trump era, they took it to 35. So even now, still, You're looking at what about a little over $15 an hour, and you can work unlimited numbers of hours and be exempt from most labor laws because you're now management. And it's that allure of now you're somebody. I'm management. That's how they get. That's how they've gotten us. And my thought in this, and I go back to the relationship that I had years ago where, you know, that came up. The embarrassment of somebody who works for a living, that wasn't how it always was in this country. And it shouldn't be. People should have pride in the work that they do. They should be respected for the work that they do. There should be dignity in the work that they do. And dignity comes in the form of being able to support oneself with decent wages, decent benefits, job security. The kind of thing that I say every worker should have a contract for, things out in writing. Every CEO's got one. Why shouldn't every worker have one? So I just found it interesting. I think it's ironic that now we hear from the right screaming and hollering, nobody wants to work anymore. Because nobody wants to work these crummy restaurant jobs, which, you know, with unemployment being as low as it is, the restaurant industry is having a really hard time. They have an incredibly hard time getting people to go back to work for poor wages, terrible working conditions. I mean, we as customers, a lot of us are terrible. I look at, you know, we've gone out a couple of times and you see the treatment of the wait staff and of the restaurants. It's deplorable. I wouldn't want to take those jobs, and I'm not surprised that people haven't gone back to them. And what the pandemic did, and this is a failure on the part of the restaurant administration association and all of those companies who just shunned their workers, sent them out into the cold during the pandemic. People didn't come back. Had they done what I said from the beginning, which was keep people attached to their jobs, get some kind of like the airline industry did, keep them attached to their job, get their health care from the same state, same thing, get their wages, same thing, their pensions, everything sort of normal through that period. Keep them attached to that job. So when things ramp back up, because we knew they would at some point, you would want to bring them back. You didn't do that. You treated them like garbage. You threw them to the curb, told them, tough, you're on your own. And they looked somewhere else. And is it a surprise that they haven't come back? Is it a shock? No, not at all. Now, here's the other part of this. People are still leaving jobs because, according to the most recent data coming out, people who leave jobs get a much higher raise than people who stay in jobs. The most recent number, if you leave a job, the increase that they saw was like 7.7%. If you stayed, it was like 5.5%. So people who are chasing those extra dollars are making more money. So the incentive is to leave. And this has been something I've been talking about for years. Corporate America doesn't care about their workers. Corporate America doesn't care about you or me. You're just a negative on a balance sheet. It's how cheap they can get you in the door, how cheaply they can hold you by holding on to health insurance over your head so that you don't leave. And what the pandemic did is it kind of shook things up a little bit and said, oh, I don't have a choice. Now it's time to look somewhere else. Well, you know what? People aren't going back to the restaurant industry, into the hospitality industry, as they call it. And why? Because they've got other options now, which is why the hospitality industry, they claim, is half a million workers short right now. But are you really surprised by it? And the answer is no. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com, or give us a call, 1-866-416-RICK, 1-866-416-7425. Got lots to get to today. Going to take your calls throughout the show. Quick break, right back.
Phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
If you're a fan of the show, you've heard our Labor History in 2 segments, and you can hear them on the radio pretty much anywhere in the U.S. Labor history has never been more important than it is right now. So here's what we'd like you to do. Tell a teacher. Tell a teacher that labor history is important and that they can get digestible 2-minute lessons that are absolutely free. Free to download, free to use, free to share. Tell a teacher to go to thericksmithshow.com/history and help us put labor back where it belongs, in the classroom. You know, generations of American workers fought, bled, and died to build the American way of life. It's our job to keep their stories alive. Go tell a teacher that we're here to help them do just that. Find us at thericksmithshow.com/history today.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, Shell has reported its highest profits in 115 years. 115 years, they posted a $39.9 billion profit. Now, that's still not as much as Exxon, who pocketed $55.7 billion. And you go, gee, I wonder why inflation's high. I wonder why we're being gouged. I wonder. Let's go to the phones. Got Alice on line one. Alice, how are we doing today?
Oh, we're hanging in there.
What's on your mind?
So, you were talking about the making the managerial positions in the hospitality
yep.
industry. Okay. So, first of all, let me state, I am a college graduate. Yay, yippee. Several degrees, but who cares? I worked for McCopco, which is the McDonald's Corporation. I was a swing manager. And the way that they do this is they tried to get me, oh, we want you to become a certified whatever, you know. And they're like, it's 45 hours a week and you get this, and I said, no, thank you. But they had, and this is what they do. And, like, the assistant managers and the store managers, they have to work. They only get a salaried position. At the time, I was working for McCopco, and I quit in 2011. It was the assistant managers were making $649 a week, but they were required to work something around 60 hours a week.
Wow.
So I can tell you it is a big thing in the hospitality industry. It's what they do. And I had absolutely no desire to, be used and abused. And as for your previous relationship, and she had apparently had a problem with men who work, I actually like myself good old country boys that know how to fix things. My first husband didn't know how to do anything like that. So to each their own, but have a good evening,
there
Rick.
You go. Appreciate it, Alice. Let's go to line three. We got Deborah on line three. Deborah, how are we doing this evening?
Hi, thank you. Thank you for your passion and helping especially the working class. Thank you. Out of Chicago, for a half a century, there has been a move towards displacing black people, which means workers, the professionals, the union workers, school teachers, and others. My question is, if there are so many jobs that are unfilled, why can't there be an effort to find out specifically, and with the unsheltered, what is it that you want to do? And find them, direct them to career choices that they would enjoy for the first time, that you would have people that would engage in work that's probably open that could be filled.
No, I agree with you. The problem is that there isn't a shortage of workers. There's a shortage of workers who are going to work for crummy wages.
Absolutely. So what I'm saying is, if we can find out what a person wishes to do, we can place them in that rather than them not doing anything.
I agree with you.
And having unfilled jobs.
Yep. And that's where I've always said that if the private sector won't do it, the public sector has to.
Is there something that the president can push for? Because President Obama, he did have a bill on jobs, and they killed it. They wouldn't allow him to do anything with jobs, even when...
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, Waukesha's only news talk station.
CBS News Brief. There's word a suspected Chinese spy balloon is now high over the Midwest. Pentagon correspondent David Martin.
Military officials have recommended against shooting it down, but officials say that recommendation could change once the balloon gets over an unpopulated area.
China insists it's a civilian balloon conducting research. The government says employers tacked on 517,000 jobs last month. CBS's Jill Schlesinger.
Although economic growth is weakening, the labor market remains resilient, which means the Fed is likely to continue raising interest rates.
The unemployment rate hit a new half-century low, 3.4%. Forecaster Craig Allen watching a northern deep freeze.
This dangerous chill has the temperatures already well below zero from Minnesota and Wisconsin across the lakes, as well as Ohio, Pennsylvania, New York State, and now moving into New England.
Wind chills dipping below zero. CBS News Brief, I'm Steve Kathan.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk from Big Bend to Menominee Falls. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Local school districts around Wisconsin have some decisions to make about spending coronavirus relief money. Schools have until fall of next year to earmark that money, but many of them are making those decisions this spring. Wisconsin schools got $1.5 billion in relief money. So far, they've reportedly only spent or budgeted about a third of it. Wisconsin elections officials are changing the rules for poll watchers after complaints after the last election. Poll watchers say rules are unclear and inconsistent from place to place. A new advisory committee will come up with new rules. It's a mix of voting experts and partisan appointees. It could take up to 2 years to pass new rules. In sports, the Bucks trimmed the Clippers last night, 106-105. The Badgers beat Ohio State. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Do your priorities for the country match the president's? Listen live as Joe Biden lays out his plans during the State of the Union address February 7th, starting at 8 p.m. on your local Civic Media radio station. Then stay with us as News Director Terry Bell and guests break down and share reaction to the policies the president presents. You can join the conversation too. The State of the Union address live with coverage from 8 to 10 p.m. Tuesday, February 7th on your local Civic Media radio station, streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
Catch Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlo at its brand new time, 6 to 8 a.m. weekdays.
The city of Shanghai started administering an inhalable COVID-19 vaccine. I hear a lot of you saying the same thing I had in my head. I don't know about that.
As long as they're not just crop dusting everyone.
Crop dusting, that's exactly what I think people would be fearful of. I would not trust the Chinese government. I would trust people who really know about inhaling something and the good that it does you. Of course, I'm talking about Dom and Crute.
Thursdays at 11:30, we are joined by Dr. Michael McCutcheon, who is a psychologist, a lecturer, and additionally, he's won 10,000 fantasy football leagues and loves to help people make easy, free money. Dr. Mike fixes your life and your lineup.
Listen Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
I'm 54, so it's too late to start saving for retirement, right?
Not right. Starting to save, even in your 50s, can really make a difference. At aceyourretirement.org, in just 3 minutes, you'll get a free personalized retirement plan. That's aceyourretirement.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Naming them to powerful committees, publicly legitimizing their screwballism, and intentionally bringing the evil of bigotry, intolerance, and even fascism in from the fringe of politics to sit in the seat of power. This is Jim Hightower saying, this is shameful, and it's dangerous. Evil swarms when so-called leaders meekly give permission for crazies to use the government power to rule over us.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, you know, Really good jobs report today. I mean, honestly, 517,000 jobs, lowest unemployment rate of my lifetime. 800,000 manufacturing jobs over the last 2 years. We're bringing manufacturing back. Inflation's coming down. Gas prices going down. Things are everything heading in the right direction. So what do we need? Distraction. The Chinese balloon. There's a Chinese balloon that's been floating around. And all of the right-wingers losing their minds. And this is where Marjorie Trainwreck Greene and her space laser may have come in. And I've had a bunch of people say, we should be shooting that down. And I got to tell you, there's part of me that goes, yeah, probably. I may have thought about it. But there's probably a lot more to than just, we're going to shoot down the balloon. And here to share some thoughts on maybe if this is a big deal. I've asked my good friend Fred Wellman to come talk with us. He's the co-founder of the Beer Hall Project, also a political consultant and former senior advisor over at the Lincoln Project. Fred, thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, great to be back, Rick. How are you, my friend?
So, giant Chinese balloon.
It flew over my house, man. I actually got pictures of it today in Missouri.
So they're spying on you. Are you not concerned that they're spying on you?
Oh my God, I'm horrified. The idea that someone could fly something overhead and take pictures of us is just shocking. Wait a minute. it's ridiculous. I mean, like I said at the top, it was a really good jobs report, like you said, right? And they had to distract. I think Eric Schmidt, our Missouri senator, tweeted 9 times today about the balloon. Even our idiot state senators and state representatives in Missouri are talking about one idiot state senator sent a letter to the governor urging him to shoot it down with the National Guard. The stupidity of it and the fact that, look, the one thing I've learned over the years is every time they're all talking about the same thing, they're told to. And every time they're all talking about the same thing, it's to distract from something else, you know, and it was a really good jobs report. You know, yeah. The economy's booming, you know, their big show and that the House committees is a big joke. You know, great. The Chinese provide an excuse to give them, you know, oh, obviously we're weak on China, which is what every American is stressed out about right now, is being weak or tough on China and the balloon. It is your classic bait, you know, smoke and mirrors and distract. Don't look over here. Look over there.
Man, my favorite statement, a guy, you know, told me that if he lived out in Montana, he'd shoot it down himself.
I mean, the other thing was at 100,000 feet at one point. I think it came down. I think when we saw it over here in Missouri, it was like 60,000. That's the high end for most of your aircraft, right? I mean, we, you know, sending our jets up there to shoot it down, it would be actually hard. We have plenty of aircraft that could do it. But again, what's the point? I mean, it's an international incident, and they'll probably do something with it. Even I was kind of like thinking they should shoot something down. And I said something earlier to a colleague of mine. I was like, you know, I'm an old Army spokesman. I was a spokesman for the Pentagon for a while, or for some famous generals. And it just goes to show again how I love the military, but they try to stay out of politics. But by trying to stay out of politics, all they do is create political problems. And, you know, and they're standing there saying, oh, yeah, we know it's a spy balloon, but we're not going to shoot it down. It wouldn't be safe. It's like, you know, you're just feeding it. You know, Biden being who Biden is, he's deferring to the military and their decision making, and he's getting his ass handed to him for it. And so it is very frustrating situation. But
I mean, if I'm sitting in that seat, I'm going to shoot it down.
Right.
But now you're going to cause an international incident, because understand, by shooting it down, they're going to shoot ours down.
Right. That's the thing. It is. You know, people forget there's a tit for tat here that goes. This isn't just a game, right? This isn't just a, you know, who's the big tough guy. You know, you can go back in history. If you know, I studied the shooting down of the U-2, right? You know, Francis Gary Powers getting shot down over Russia in the U-2. There's implications to this that occur. There's second and third order effects go into making these decisions. Is there really a threat from a Chinese balloon? No. Yeah, it is. It's nothing they can't gather with their satellites, and I'm sure we'll find out what this was all about and what they were looking to gain. The funniest part is seeing guys trying to say. I think Schmidt tweeted out that it was hovering over Missouri's military installations. All right, look, yeah, a helium balloon at 100,000 feet isn't hovering over anything. It's flying on the damn jet stream. It's going pretty fast. I mean, the thing flew across the entire country in about a day. So it's just the ridiculousness of it all is just, it's just comical. But again, it gives them a show to divert our attention. It gives them a show to divert our attention and show Biden's weak after he had just an explosive jobs report, explosive economic reports. And of course, we had the State of the Union on Tuesday. So now they're going to spend the next few days just talking about how weak we are on China.
No, and this is where, you know, you can't have an actual conversation about, you know, it being there. And as you said, it's not something they could have already gotten from their satellites.
Right.
You know, it's this kind of reactionary response to this stuff, simply to drum up anger and to drum up division and to keep us pitted against each other, to make Biden look weak, which is why, again, you know, there's part of me that goes, I probably would have shot it down just for that purpose. You know, maybe I would have borrowed Marjorie Trainwreck Greene's, you know, Jewish space laser.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you shoot it down, then you box it up and return it to him, right? You know, it's like, well, yeah, and we could justify the shoot down, Rick. You know, I mean, it is a safety hazard to flight. It was lowering. At one point, pilots were reporting that was within 10,000 feet of their aircraft, which is pretty close, actually, in air terms. So again, I think there really is a case you could have made that was an aircraft safety issue, and we shot down for the safety of our airspace, not necessarily international incident. I'm the same way. I mean, I don't know why the decision was made. My gut tells me the Pentagon did what the Pentagon does best, which is be cautious and hold their cards close. And Biden does what he does best, which is defer to the generals and show respect for traditions and norms, and decided this is what they want to do. And nobody's thinking the political implications again.
Here's the other part. Here's the funny part of this as well. The same people who are, you know, hair on fire, you know, talking about let's shoot this down and cause an international incident are the very people who are saying we shouldn't be doing anything in Ukraine. We should be using diplomacy.
Right.
Do you find that interesting that they can use both thoughts?
Oh, I find it stupid. And you know, I mean, look, you know, we have to be honest. These guys are, look, I had Greg Sargent from the Washington Post on my podcast yesterday, and we were laughing about the fact that the Republicans have had their hypocrisy genes removed. You know, trying to accuse the Republicans of being shameless or being hypocrisy is a waste of time. They don't care. They're going to talk out of both sides of their mouths all day long. They're completely unabashed about it, and they're shameless. I mean, somebody pointed out that, again, my new Missouri senator Eric Schmidt. Everybody's joking that he was complaining with the Chinese satellite flying over the farmland that he sold to China, which is a true story. He was the one that, you know, signed the law allowing them to buy land, and it had previously been illegal. So half our land's owned by China now. It is the irony and the silliness of it all is all about scoring the political points. And you saw it this week on the House, you know, the committees, right?
Yep.
They don't actually want to legislate. Marjorie Taylor Greene, you know, we got to bring her up. You know, she got all of her clips about attacking them about CRT and the $5.1 billion at Winnell Elementary School. But you know what she did? She ducked out of that committee. She only spent 5 minutes in committee. She only came in to say her piece and get her video clip, and then she ducked out. That's it. She's not there to legislate. They're not there to do anything for the good of the American people. They're there to get their clips, get their TV, get their hit, and that's what they're doing. I mean, it is.
And that's what that whole display over denouncing socialism and all of that nonsense was. That's all that was an exercise in, hey, look at me. And to get that one clip that McCarthy could go out there and say, Democrats are for socialism, without actually defining what socialism is and, you know, talking about, you know, what exactly they mean. There's no enforcement mechanism. There was nothing there, no substance whatsoever, other than the performative display of, hey, look at me, I need attention.
Yeah. And the thing is, you know, we talk a lot about reaching across the aisle and getting the Republicans have figured out something. I don't think, frankly, between you and I, and hopefully no one else is listening, the Democrats keep thinking, and people on our side of the aisle keep thinking, we need to appeal to Republicans and we need to appeal to independents. But for years now, and I think this situation, the balloon, is a perfect example of the socialism. The Republicans figured out all they got to do is keep the red meat flowing to their own supporters and turn them out.
Yep.
They've figured out that the turnout game is the most important thing. It's not convincing independents. It's not convincing Democrats who are trying to actually help. There's absolutely no value in bipartisanship. What they have to do is keep the red meat flowing to the Fox News, OAN, Newsmax audiences. And that's what they're doing. That's what today is. The whole balloon thing is nothing more than keeping their ferocious crowds and their angry followers angry, right?
Their daily dose of outrage candy. Absolutely.
Yeah, their outrage candy. Tim Miller's book is great. If you know Tim Miller from The Bulwark, his book is you know, Why We Did It. And he talks about his experience in the Republican Party. And he has a great piece, if you ever read that book. He was on my show too. And I did a book thing with him, and he talks about really smartly about how the dopamine effect, how the right-wing radiosphere, which we talked about earlier before we went on the air, you know, starting with Rush Limbaugh, is they figured out that you just got to keep that anger machine rolling, and it leads to dollars, and it leads to more. And that's what McCarthy is doing. That's what Marjorie Taylor Greene, that's what she lives for. That's what all these fools today talking about the Chinese balloon and how we're weak on China. Hawley's whole thing with, you know, China. They've figured out that as long as they can keep their you know, masses angry and confused and not focused on the fact that their jobs are going away, that they're getting nothing from their government, that their schools are going to 4-day weeks like they're here in Missouri, that their schools are rated 48th in the country. It doesn't matter. As long as they're angry at the right people, they won't notice their lives are effing miserable.
Yeah.
Right?
As long as we're drinking libtard tears.
There you go. Got to own the libs. As long as I'm owning libs, as long as you all hate the same people together, everything's fine. And it's a sad statement that it works. It is working. There's just no way. You know, I was a senior advisor for Marcus Files in Georgia 14. Marjorie Taylor Greene won handily, barely campaigned. And the end is because there's a whole lot of people who just love being angry. Yeah. And I met him. I knocked doors. And I remember this specifically one lady was like, "Oh, Marjorie Taylor Greene, she's my girl." I'm like, "Why? What's she done for you?" "Oh, she makes people crazy." I'm like, "Oh, that's exactly what you need in your elected representative. Are they doing anything for you? It doesn't matter. Just they hate the people that I hate, and those people hate them. Good enough for me." Yep. And so,
no, I was in Georgia too. I heard the exact same thing when we were down there working for the Warnock runoff. Mm-hmm. You know, it was the exact same frame.
Right. Be angry. Stay angry.
No. But here's the thing. And you talked about, you know, trying to unite people. And I've been talking about this all week. I want to unite people. I want people to come together. But I also understand that you're never going to get some, and you've got to leave them behind. The fives, you let go. At this point, if you're on the Marjorie Three Names bandwagon, we're never reaching you. It's time to find people who want to move this country forward and do so. And you may just have to leave them behind.
That's it. And I think for me, one of the things I'm very focused on in my work and the work I'm excited I'll be announcing here in the next couple of weeks, some new work we're doing, is it is time for us to understand that what we have to do is energize our voters. We have to care about our voters. I did a little rant to my podcast this week about that someone tweeted out about how we need to stop supporting. This is your sign. We need to stop donating to races. We consistently lose by 30 points. No. That's nothing more than saying that those of you who live in red places, those of you who are stuck in districts that have been gerrymandered to hell and gone, we're just going to forget about you. But oh, by the way, don't forget to vote for us every 4 years for president.
But come on, Fred. There's something to be said about you're going to spend $100 million on a campaign you're never going to win. You fight in those districts, but you use those resources better.
Well, Rick, you're talking about limit. You act like there's a limited amount of resources. I think what you're talking about is harnessing small donors and ensuring we don't leave no one behind. You know, in this last cycle, Rick, 23 House Republicans ran unopposed, and only 6 Democrats ran unopposed. 109 of the races, the Democratic candidates only raised an average of $61,000. That's less than a city council race in a major city. That's all they raised, and they got no support. There are many ways to harness small dollar donors, and I'm excited about something I'm doing on that line to help these folks. But we can't keep telling small dollar donors they're stupid for being passionate about our democracy. We can't keep telling people that we're going to ignore them. I understand that the party has to make decisions and the big PACs have to make decisions about where their money goes. But then to basically tell those 23 districts, by the way, represent 17.5 million Americans. We're basically telling 17.5 million Americans that you don't matter. There's a lot of ways to support candidates that go beyond just straight up money. But you know what? The DCCC dropped $8 million on the Cuellar race in Texas. $8 million on a single congressional seat. So please, I don't buy for one damn second that there's a limited amount of money that could even help a little bit. You understand? A little bit for so many of these candidates. When you're averaging $61,000 for 109 races, but one race attracted $8 million from the DCCC, I'm sorry, I don't buy it.
No, I'm with you.
I don't buy there's limited funds.
No, I'm with you on this to the
limited vision.
I'm with you to the degree that we need to be funding these all of these races and get people in. My point is you look at someone like McGrath in Kentucky, you weren't winning that.
But see, that's a Senate race, Rick. I mean, I think what you're doing, I think you're confusing the differences too. And there was a great conversation, a colleague of mine had, a friend of mine and I had a conversation today about this, how that we do have a problem in the Democratic cycle and where folks from, especially the big donors from out of states, we're talking big donors here, out of the Senate states, they fall in love with a candidate who has no chance of winning in the race they're in. We do have to empower the candidates who are running their races. We have to let candidates run the races they need to run in the states and the districts and the cities they live in, and let the voters choose and give them a chance to prove themselves in those districts. And it may not be somebody in New York or LA loves. But if they love them in Kentucky, they love them elsewhere. I think I always get that one thrown in my face, the Amy McGrath race or the Jamie Harrison race, or of course my race, Marcus's Flowers. But those are not, again, we still have to fight. We always want to use those examples of the 100 million races or the 60 million races. But again, we have to remember those are such outliers. The real issue is no one else is supporting them. No one fought MAGA. Not one single third-party organization ran an ad against Marjorie Taylor Greene. I'm telling you right now, not a single PAC, not the DNC, not the DCCC, not one outside organization ran a single ad against the worst of the MAGA crowd, right?
Look, Fred.
We have to fight for democracy. We are
on the same page here, Fred. We are absolutely on the same page. As someone who lives in a rural area, Scott, pardon me, Perry, as my congressman, who had a challenger who raised almost no money and had a chance of winning had they put a little bit of resource into her.
A little bit. I mean, that's the punchline, Rick.
We are not on different pages here.
You know, there is actually a study done by our colleagues and some friends of mine at the organization called It Starts Today, now Every State Blue. And Every State Blue had Washington University do a study for them. Anyways, they had a study done. And it's shown that it's about there's a certain amount of money, but your average congressional race to be competitive is about $200,000 minimum.
Yep.
$200,000 minimum. We're not talking millions. We're not talking 8 million or 6 million. We're talking 200 grand, and you can empower a candidate to hire good people to run ads, do those things they need to run a competitive campaign, and put up a good fight. And by the way, you and I know money makes more money. So 200 grand will actually make more money. The interesting thing about the study we're doing right now is while 109 races only raised an average of 61,000, you know what the next tier up was races? 2 million. Okay. I mean, talk about has and has nots, right?
No, this tells me something different, though. This tells me that again, my frame of Democrats, if there's a street fight, I'll offer to hold your coat. They won't go into places where there's a fight.
Right.
And this has been the knock against Democrats for a very long time. They won't go into those places and fight, whereas, you know, Republican money will absolutely go into a Democratic stronghold, just for no other reason than to be the fly in the ointment. You know, Democrats haven't done that. So if you're working to do that, I'm 100% behind you.
Yeah, well, we're going to have to talk. You know, I mean, the thing is we got to fight. You get it. And the thing we found with the Marcus Flowers campaign specifically was, and I used to get the emails, Rick. I mean, I was the comms director for the general election, in addition to being senior advisor. And what would really amaze me was people would just look, I don't know if you're going to win. I don't think you're going to win. It's okay. I live in a very blue district in X state. I want to make a difference. I want to fight this person. Marjorie Taylor Greene should have competition.
Sure.
And for me, that's what it comes down to, is that I believe there are, you know, that campaign was fueled by nothing but small donors. Nothing. Like, even most of our donors didn't even max out. We ran not a single fundraiser outside of Georgia. We didn't go to Hollywood. We didn't go to LA. Not one fundraiser. Marcus stayed in Georgia. We raised all the money through small dollar donors. It's possible to do that. It's possible to fight these people. Because look, Marjorie Taylor Greene did not want to go back to Georgia. Hell, her husband left her in the middle of the campaign because she's dating a guy from RSBN. She wanted to go to Trump rallies with her boyfriend. It's all she wanted to do. But we made her come home and campaign. Heck, she had to fly in from out of state to do our debate. You know, she showed up pissed off because we were inconveniencing her from her high-flying life to make her come back to Georgia and actually debate her opponent.
Right.
We need to stand up to these people. And what I saw was, going back to what you mentioned, is our donors, our supporters, the hundreds of thousands, and literally 100,000 of them, they just wanted to see somebody fight. And that, and there's this hunger among the Democratic general electorate. There's a hunger amongst Democratic base to fight, not kumbaya. They want to see a fight. They want us to take it to them. And so you're seeing, that's why I think people are excited seeing Hakeem Jeffries and these others. That's why AOC has been placed on the oversight committee as number two. The number two Democrat on the oversight committee is now Alexander Ocasio-Cortez. There's a reason for that. We need to fight these guys. And
no, there's no question about that. Yeah. You know, I've been screaming about this since the 90s. You know, this is not new. None of this stuff is about new, time, man.
Right? Well, we're going to get at it. So
I mean, Gingrich, maybe. You know, the thing you can give Gingrich credit for is Gingrich did this for the Republicans back in the 90s. We're not even Magellan. Longer. We're not discovering new lands. We're not reinventing the wheel. We know how to do
it's
this
all been
stuff.
Talked about.
There is a path. You just have to get in there and roll up your sleeves, ball up your little digits, and throw a couple.
There you go. I agree. Well, you know, I'm not afraid to do that. I mean, you know my bio. I was a soldier for 22 years. I went to war four times. I was in the Lincoln Project, who I don't know were kind of famous for not actually shying from a fight. I'm not one to avoid taking up the mantle and charging to the flames and charging to the war. So I'm very excited. Hopefully we could do some cool stuff, but we get it. And I think there's enough of us coming together finally to actually do something about it.
No, it's about time. It's about time.
Yeah.
Before I let you go, I want to get your thoughts. Tuesday is going to be the State of the Union, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Any thoughts on what we might see out of the president? I'm sure the job numbers are going to come up a time or two. I'm sure the manufacturing jobs that have been created, 800,000 of them. I'm sure that's going to come up a time or two, maybe something on infrastructure. Any
Absolutely.
Other thoughts?
Ukraine. You know, I mean, Ukraine has been, I hope he frames Ukraine the way he should, that has been a giant success, that what Mr. Biden and his team have done has united NATO. They've energized Europe. They've brought together a coalition of fractious countries that in many ways were hardly working together at all. Had allowed 20 years of the war in the Middle East to distract them from their core purpose, which is defending Europe from Russia. It's a huge success. It's a foreign policy success. And the fact that Ukraine exists as a country is because that Joe Biden stepped up and led a coalition of our allies to support this country fighting for their freedom and their democracy. So I hope he takes that mantle and runs with it, because he's earned it. And all those naysayers are saying otherwise are fools. I assure you, Ukraine knows who their friends are and what they're doing for them. And so I believe that'll be a big part of it. And I do believe he'll take, I can't imagine a scenario. He's been very forthright talking about the threats to our democracy. So I can't imagine he's not going to take it to them and talk about the stupidity and the threats to our democracy and the movement of the extreme, what he calls ultra MAGA, the MAGA movement that is undermining our freedom. And then I hope he does talk about these actions across the country, the tons and tons of laws targeting transgender youth, the targeting of freedom of speech in Florida, the banning of books. I'm very hopeful that he'll bring that up and take a stand for our country as the president fighting for our actual constitution and fighting for those who are being assaulted across the country as Republicans use their bigotry as making that actual law. So I'm cautiously optimistic, but I think it'll be a good. He's got a lot to crow about. You know, that as much as we want, you know, is Mr. Biden perfect? I obviously we all agree that, you know, no one is, but it's hard to deny that he's had a very successful 2 years in most every measure. It's certainly not perfect, but we are leaps and bounds above where we were 2 years ago under the monster Trump and his idiotic and incompetent administration that bumbled their way through the COVID crisis and bumbled their way into a failure in Afghanistan. So I'm hopeful we'll hear Joe Biden take credit for the good things that his administration will be able to pull off in 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot, as you said, you know, the fact that, you know, this past month, 517,000 jobs. I was expecting
there's
that
no
in
denying
no
it.
Way, shape, no. or form. An unemployment rate lower than any point in my lifetime. Manufacturing coming back, investing in infrastructure. There is so much positive. And yet all we keep hearing from the right-wing outrage machine is, well, outrage. division.
Too many. Well, I think the media is and the general media is doing too much of appeasing their outrage and their lies, and they're treating their arguments as sane arguments, as reasonable arguments. They're not, and they act like touting the success of the administration is somehow it being too nice and too fair, and we don't want them to call us liberals. Look, the facts are the facts, right? The country is in a much better place economically and than it has been in decades, certainly not coming out of a COVID crisis. We're not in recession. Everybody said that we're going to be in recession by now. We should be in a recession.
As hard as they're trying.
After a global pandemic, then we should be. I mean, nobody would fault somebody for going into recession after a global pandemic.
Yeah.
That's what the economists said would be normal. And somehow.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.